are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Drafting this guy to be the second player on your team, one of the faces of your franchise, you kind of want to expect more.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
But the Dodgers seem happy to roll him out there every day. The numbers overall look fine to me.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits quiz show podcast. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. We have our usual esteemed group of experts on hand today, starting with one Darius Austin across the pond. Darius, where can you be reached on Twitter, and how are you today?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I'm suffering a little bit from a cold, but I'm soldiering on and hopefully hand out some fancy advice worthy of the esteem that you mentioned.
Well, that is what you do, my friend. So you've set the bar for yourself quite high. We also have J.R. Fenton from Philly country, the home of all the major sports titles in this country, I guess. J.R., yeah, that is Title Town. They call Green Bay up by me Title Town, but Philadelphia gets it now, especially since the Packers look to be on a never-ending road to sucking. But anyway, besides all that, I put together a list of players today, and this probably will not be one of the trickiest ones for our analysts to figure out exactly what these players have in common. And the key here is these are all going to be higher profile names, and they're all going to be bats. So we should probably just get right to it and start talking about the only catcher on the list, whose name is Evan Gattis, who I saw was struggling again today before Lance McCullers, Justin Mason's man crush, got pounded on for 8 runs in the 5th inning by the Twins today. I noticed that Gattis was having another poor showing today. So Evan Gattis is the first guy on the list. And when you looked up what's going on with Evan Gattis, what did you think was happening here, JR?
Looking up for Evan Gattis has not been pretty good lately. I think he was 1-for-10 going into this game with an OBP at 250, which is pretty terrible. He's drafted right around 140, 145 ADP, depending on what site you looked at. So if you're in a one-catcher league, Gattis has 3 RBIs on the year, batting 7-for-33 is not really what you expected out of the gate. Hopefully maybe you're using the waiver wire, adding a Manny Pena or someone like that kind of help you out and fill the days off. But, yeah, Gattis has been pretty terrible lately.
Yeah, there seems to have been some thought that he was going to be able to rake if he could concentrate on DHing more than catching. And so, and I don't know exactly how the breakup of his at-bats have gone, but it certainly hasn't been this high production that a lot of people were hoping they would get out of a more focused, more playing time kind of Evan Gattis. Do you have any shares of Evan Gattis, Darius?
Yeah, I do have him in a couple of leagues, and especially I play in a league that includes slugging, so he's quite valuable, I thought he would be valuable at least from that perspective. It's not been a great start, I think. There's some concern for me about exactly how much playing time he's going to get with catcher. I think you're not expecting that much from guys outside of like the Posey group. A lot of these guys aren't getting much more than 400 play appearances now, but you thought maybe Gattis would be one of those guys because he isn't catching anymore. He hasn't caught a game this year. It's been all DH. So I kind of figured that would mean that he would get a larger share of playing time. But actually, the Astros are doing a lot of rotation. They're working in guys like Derek Fisher and Jake Marisnik. That's sometimes cutting into Gattis' playing time. And if Kyle Tucker ends up coming up sooner rather than later, then you wonder how that's going to shake out as well. So I still think for the position, you know, he's probably still going to end up as a top 10 catcher because it isn't going to take an awful lot. And that the lineup is great. So even if he's hitting seventh, as he has been in a lot of these games, then I think he can return some value there. But I do wonder if we might see slightly less playing time than you would have expected when we thought he was going to be the majority of the DH at bats there.
Well, the other thing that we see happening now is J.D. Davis seems to be hitting a little bit. He's got a few good games of hitting in a row, and he was really hot in the spring. So that's another scenario where if Ulieski Gurriel gets back, where there'll be some more people fighting for those DH at-bats, and it certainly looks like the pitching staff in general prefers to throw to Brian McCann. So there would be some reason for some early season concern, and, you know, like Darius said, once you got outside of the top three or four catchers, there was nothing you could really do but gamble. So, and it seemed like there were some things that looked like they might fall in Gaddis's favor. He's always been a notoriously streaky hitter, and he is streaking quite poorly at the moment. Now let's talk about former third baseman turned first baseman Ryan Zimmerman of the Washington Nationals. Darius, you own any Ryan Zimmerman? Going into yesterday, he had an .097 batting average with a .176 on base percentage and a .194 slugging. Where are you on Ryan Zimmerman for this early season stretch that we're looking at right now?
Yeah, I don't have him anywhere actually, and it's not because I don't believe in his bat really, but I thought the health is concern have not really gone away, and he made it through more or less the whole season last year with a decent amount of rest here and there, and I just didn't necessarily see that repeating, and I think I just liked other guys in that spot where he was going better, so I didn't end up with him anywhere, and I don't feel too bad about that right now. The spring training was super weird for him, where they basically just kept him off the field, working on the backfields instead. I think they're very concerned about his health, and so they're going to rotate him in and out of the lineup a lot. I think Matt Adams is starting again at first base for him. I think this is the fourth game out of 12 that Zimmerman hasn't started now, so it looks like they're really set on keeping him out of the lineup, hopefully to keep him healthy. But if he's not actually going to hit when he is in the lineup either, then obviously you've got a big problem with a part-time player. He really needs to hit like he did last year to be valuable in sort of shallower leagues with that kind of playing time. So yeah, I'm not particularly encouraged. I think he's obviously getting well into his mid-30s now, and I think the Nats are very conscious of that health concern, so it might be the best for him kind of long term, and certainly they're a team that wants to be in the playoffs, but it's probably going to be a pretty annoying situation for fantasy owners, especially if you're in a daily league and you can't take him out of your lineup and replace him with somebody who is starting when he's on the bench.
Well, for what it's worth, Matt Adams has a .350 OBP with a 20% walk rate here early in the season, so he definitely has managed to get himself on base when he's played. JR, are you in on a bounce back here soon from Ryan Zimmerman?
No, definitely not. Even at his .148 ADP, I was not buying any shares of him. Look at his game log, Chuck. I mean, Darius said that there's a lot of guys who are getting in and out that lineup, similar with Gaddis over in Houston. And Zimmerman's only home run this year came off Tehran at Atlanta in that short field, and he owns Tehran in his career. So other than that, we're really not seeing Ryan Zimmerman take any progressive steps to kind of repeating his high early season numbers that he normally does. Maybe this is signs to come. Maybe this is like that Victor Martinez effect where Zimmerman really is going to be starting to fade it out. And for weekly leagues, God, he's just going to crush it sometimes if he doesn't play two or three games a week.
Yeah, it looks like they might be leaning that way right now. And again, the Nationals are a team that are sort of in all-in mode this season because this is the last season that they have the known commodity of Bryce Harper, who is leading the bigs with 6 home runs going into today. So they need to cash in, so they don't have any reason to be patient, especially with a veteran player like Zimmerman, when they apparently have a pretty decent backup in Matt Adams, who's always ready to step in for him when he is struggling. And Zimmerman is doing a lot of that right now. Now let's talk about another player who had some curious issues going into the year as far as us trying to figure out if he could possibly replicate last year's big numbers, and that's Chris Taylor of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, the second base and the outfield eligibility sort of drew you into him in the early mid rounds, and going into yesterday he was hitting .205 with a .220 on base percentage without a home run. I think he did homer yesterday, but Chris Taylor, J.R. Fenton, where are you on Chris Taylor? Do you own some shares, and do you think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of last year's version?
I hope. I drafted Taylor right actually above his ADP. I took him at 92 overall in my great fantasy invitational league. His ADP is right on 94, 95. So people were playing a kind of high price for him, but it's probably like why you said, Chuck, because that dual eligibility with second base and outfield. I was really hoping this guy starts turning it on. And then we finally saw a flash of light last night, which was great with his home run. Over his last 10 games, he does only have 10 hits. So he's not swinging a really hot bat, but I guess if we have to pull a positive, it would be that home run yesterday. Now, we got to remember, this is a guy who's completely had to switch positions once this Turner injury happened. He now got thrust into the outfield, so he wasn't really in the same cycle of everyday routine that normal players are going to be into, and maybe that'd affect him a little bit. Maybe the cold weather is, but you know, all the Dodgers aren't hitting, so this could be a collaboration of just the Dodgers have a team just starting off pretty slow.
Yeah, they certainly seem to be, as has been noted in a lot of different outlets, that they seem to be missing Mr. Turner in the middle of that lineup to a very large extent. Darius, where are you on Chris Taylor?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I'm not really concerned that he's still getting to bat leadoff. JR mentioned the offensive struggles for the whole team. That's obviously going to be impacting his run score total right now, but I owned him in a few leagues, and one of the reasons I kind of felt like he was reasonably safe, maybe a bit safer than a lot of people were expecting, was that I did think they'd keep hitting him lead off, and that does still seem to be the case even with the slow start. So I think as long as he's not moved out of that slot, I'm expecting kind of mid-teens power and speed and a good amount of runs scored, and I think this Dodgers lineup is going to turn it around, and they'll be just fine. They're not going to be the asteroids or anything, but I think anybody batting leadoff for a non-terrible team is going to be worth a decent amount, and I think Taylor's outbreak last year was definitely real, so I think he'll be fine, and just a little bit of a slow start is all.
Well, oddly enough, the next person that we're going to talk about was the highest person in ADP that was on the list of players today, and that's Jose Ramirez, who, despite his .086 batting average going into yesterday, he did have a lot of walks, so his OBP was quite a bit better, and he did have a stolen base and a home run. I did see that he homered yesterday. I believe he had another hit as well. So maybe he's starting to break out of it, but for a top 20 player, Jose Ramirez was a relatively unproven commodity going into last year. So I think it's curious to try and project or think about if Jose Ramirez can fully bounce back here and if he's a guy that is going to live up to such high draft billing. What do you think about Jose Ramirez there, Darius?
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty weird start, really. He's actually, you know, as you mentioned, the plate discipline numbers, they look great. He's walking way more than he's striking out. So we're not seeing a Jose Ramirez that's suddenly chasing a lot, missing pitches. He's actually being a lot more patient than he has been so far in his career. I think he's at 4.7 pitches per plate appearance right now. He's barely swung at the first pitch. So maybe this is actually a case of not enough aggression rather than anything kind of like that he's expanding or pressing at all, I think. And again, like the Dodgers, Cleveland have been ice cold on offense, so that's really hurt the runs and RBI numbers over there as well, which I think will come around just fine. I do have a little bit of concern with the power, just because I don't think he really is, you know, that high-end a guy, and I think he's certainly somebody who's benefited from the change in the ball. And I think he is somebody that with just even a little bit of a drop-off, you might see not quite so many of those balls end up over the fence, but he's still going to give you the speed. I think that the approach is still great, so you're going to get a good batting average out of him. And I think that the Cleveland lineup as a whole is going to come around and be just fine as well. So I'm not freaking out. I think it's, yeah, and just another slow start, and maybe he just needs to get a touch more aggressive at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly point to the Cleveland lineup as having a number of traditionally slow starters in the lineup. Edwin Encarnacion was definitely off to a very slow start last year. Jason Kipnis is a guy who's been a traditionally streaky hitter, and he's been off to a pretty slow start as well. And the weather being an extreme that we don't usually see. I mean, we see some cold days, but usually we see some warm days mixed in, and we really haven't had that yet to a large extent. JR, where are you on Jose Ramirez? Do you think he can still live up to that top 20 pick billing?
It's good. Like you said, one thing you mentioned earlier, Chuck, which was interesting, was the walks. Few players have more walks than hits. Jose Ramirez has 5 hits on his 38 at-bats, but he has 8 walks, which is kind of surprising. But if you're drafting this guy to be the second player on your team, one of the faces of your franchise, you kind of want to expect more. But like Darius was saying, and you were saying, Chuck, with this cold weather, it's going to heat up and he's going to be fine. I mean, Cleveland has been freezing, even snow. So let's just kind of hold off a little bit to these hitters that are all playing in these cold temperatures. But I see what you're saying. It's a little slow start, but I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, it certainly is a conceivable scenario that he's going to bounce back and be just fine. It's just some extra questions with a lot of these players, either track record-wise or we just had some questions going into the season to begin with about what had happened with their ADP from last year to this year, etc. The one person I want to point to that I was really concerned about going into the year, and he fell in a number of the drafts I was in way, way deeper than I thought he was going to fall, and that's Corey Seager, former MVP candidate Corey Seager following his rookie year. JR, you have some concerns about Corey Seager with a combination of the injury concerns in spring training and what we've seen exactly so far from him?
The injuries in spring training weren't really a concern because they were kind of just nicks and bruises and nothing too serious that was going to hold Corey back. I actually have a lot of shares of him in the 9 or 10 leagues I'm in. I think I have 4 or 5 shares of him. So, and I've been keeping an update on Corey every day, see how he's playing. And his 8-for-34 to start off the season isn't bad. But then I guess this is what we could say about, we just said about the Indians too. You know, they're slow starting right now. The Dodgers as well are slow starting. I mean, that team across the board is not producing what they should be. We've even been bringing it up that, are the Dodgers as good as we thought? Like, that question was raised. And I think right at the heart of that is Corey Seager. It'll be fine. He's only had 38 at-bats. He's not really walking that much. He does have 5 walks, which still is encouraging. And his hard hit contact rate is up pretty good. So let's just let it warm up. But Corey Seager should really pan out nicely for his 43 to 45 ADP there where he was going.
Darius, you agree with JR? Are you bullish on Mr. Seager right now?
Yeah, I am. I think I was maybe a little bit more twitchy about the elbow issue, and I know he had some issues coming into the playoffs as well, and there was kind of a lot of concern around him last October. So I think that was kind of lingering in my mind, but the Dodgers seem happy to roll him out there every day. The numbers overall look fine to me. He's been getting unlucky on balls in play, but he hit a home run last night. I found him to be a guy who is actually a bit streaky with these things. I did an exit velocity report at Fantasy Pros last year, and Seager was a guy who sort of seemed to be constantly at the extremes of that. One in month he would be up 5 or 6 miles per hour, and then the next month he'd be down at the bottom of the list. So I do think maybe it's not a guy who gets talked about this way, but I think he is actually a little bit streaky in terms of his form, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him come out and have a month in May where he hits, 330, 340 with 5 or 6 home runs and makes all these numbers look great. So I'm not worried about him. I think he's an elite level talent, really, and I think he can hit 25, 30 home runs with a great batting average as well. So, yeah, I think he'll be fine.
Well, one of the things that has happened with Corey Seager is that he is a zero speed guy, relatively speaking, to the position. And as speed has become more of a premium, it's harder to stomach having a middle infielder who's really not going to help you much at all in the speed category, which is something we'll get more of a chance to talk about as we go through this player list here. a different sort of question surrounds the next guy that I want to talk about. And the next guy I want to talk about is JD Martinez. Maybe this is only my perception. My perception is that until JD Martinez hit his power streak last year with the Diamondbacks, that we had this idea that JD Martinez was a mid to upper tier power guy who had some problems with staying healthy and staying on the field on a regular basis, who had sort of salvaged his career with a bit of a swing alteration. And then the Arizona Diamondbacks happened, and when that stretch there happened, all of a sudden, of course, Scott Boras wanted to make him into a $550 million type of contract player, because that's what Boras is supposed to do on behalf of his players. And then this year started, and now he's sort of expected to be the main thrust of power in an all-around good hitting team in Boston. And it hasn't started wonderfully yet to this point, and I'm wondering if Darius is at all down or concerned about if JD Martinez is going to turn back into who we maybe thought he was.
No, I mean, I've not really had any concerns about Martinez's bat for a long time now. I've pretty much considered him one of the best pure hitters in baseball for the last 2-3 years, and it's just a question of how long he's on the field for me. Now he seems to have got the Red Sox to let him play the outfield at least some of the time. I don't really love that from a health standpoint, but if that's what keeps him happy, and I know some players don't take that well to DHing full time either, then maybe that's not going to hurt as much as I think it is. The other alternative, of course, is that the Red Sox keep watching him in the outfield and realize that it's a terrible idea to put him out there anyway, because they actually have three good outfielders. So that maybe we'll see him DH more as the season goes along. But in terms of his power and his batting average, I think both of those will come around. I think he's an excellent hitter. He's probably got a few adjustments to make to his new park, to his new division. But overall, he's been just an outstanding hitter pretty much the whole time he's been on the field since he got to Detroit. So I'm not worried about him. And I think he'll be a great run producer in the heart of that Boston lineup, really.
JR, I'm curious, with you being up in the Philly way, but being a National League guy, do you root for Boston players or against them? I mean, do you have a relationship with the Yankees and the Red Sox, or you just find it to be an American League annoyance off to your east?
One roommate's a diehard Yankees fan from the Bronx, and the girlfriend is from right outside of Boston. So I got to get it from both sides. So I kind of hate both teams equally, if you know what I mean, for being a Philly guy. But JD Martinez is one guy that I have literally in every league. I would think I was this high guy in our FWFB standings. I mean, I had JD where I was drafting him in the top 15 to 19 range. So I was expecting big things from JD to start off, and he really kind of was very quiet in the first 10 days, but over his last 16 at bats, he does have 4 hits. He does have that home run, and he had a great double off the wall the other day. JD's going to turn it on, but he's streaky. I mean, he's as streaky as they come. He can go in a range where there's 2 weeks where he pops out 10 dingers in 2 weeks, and he's right back on track to where he's supposed to be. So he is adjusting. A bigger media market out there in Boston, you know, very cold up there right now, very cold. You don't even want to swing the bat and make contact with the ball because it hurts your hands. So let's just wait a little bit on JD, but it's encouraging, I think, what he's doing in the last week of the bats.
Well, the other thing I always find curious about sluggers going to Boston is that the odd dimensions of the field itself can play with a guy for a while, too. I found it really odd that everyone thought that Eric Hosmer was going to turn into one of the best hitters in baseball if he just, you know, because you could just put the overlay over the top of it, and all of a sudden his opposite field prowess was going to change everything for Hosmer. I just always wonder mentally if there's some mental adjustment period, or just that turns into a physical adjustment period of getting used to Fenway Park in and of itself. So we shall see how it plays out in the coming weeks. Now, a player who saw a meteoric rise in his ADP from 2017 to 2018 is one Byron Buxton. Byron Buxton, who was hitting .161 with a .161 on-base percentage going into yesterday. He did have two stolen bases. I saw that he was on base twice today, including a double. So maybe he is starting to snap out of it. But I'm wondering, I saw Byron Buxton go ahead of Tommy Pham on a fairly regular basis. I saw, you know, people making pretty sizable investments in Byron Buxton. JR, how do you feel about those kind of investments? Do you think they still have a decent chance at paying off?
Chuck, I feel like there's two kinds of people who look at Byron Buxton. There's the people who owned him at the end of 2016 when he had a great like September and had those six or seven home runs, and his hype got built up for last year. And then last year we saw the same thing with Buxton in the beginning of drafts. He was going very much higher than what we thought. People were buying into Byron Buxton, and he kind of let them down throughout the season. And then again, he had a great finish to the season, and everyone bought in all again on Byron Buxton. Is this his year he's going to finally put it together? And just as you had mentioned, it was crazy him going in the top 50 for ADP when for a season he's never really put it together. So I find myself not buying into that high price, although I do like Byron. He's helped me win championships in the past couple of years. But I'm going to be in more of that wait-and-see mode for him. Once these owners kind of get frustrated and he's not giving them what they want early in the year, I'm going to try to shark right in and get him. Three hits in his last 20 at-bats, six hits for the whole season combined. The two stolen bases are nice. I'd like to see that pace get up a little bit more. But he's putting good contact on the ball. We're just going to be wait and see. But I'm very happy with him frustrating in these owners who took him at the ADP 48. Let him keep disappointing them, because I'm going to sneak right in later.
Yeah, I actually took him in one league where I thought I needed to make up for my lack of speed. I took him in one league, and maybe I'm overestimating what I think his speed upside is. I believe he can steal 40-plus bases, and if he does that, then it's hard to say, you know, if Billy Hamilton really does fall off and there really is a great deal less speed to go around, he could still live up to that top 50 kind of billing. But I really, it's a little more tenuous when he's a guy who's had as many stretches of long struggles as Byron Buxton has had. Where are you on Byron Buxton right now, Darius?
Yeah, I don't own him anywhere, and I just thought that the price was prohibitively high given what I still perceive to be some significant risk, really, because even when he was outstanding in the second half last year, he was still striking out a ton. I don't think the approach is there at the plate yet. Maybe it never will be, and as you say, maybe he is just one of these guys who, you know, he's going to continuously frustrate. He'll just keep doing this. He'll have these immensely cold streaks, and then he'll go out and, you know, hit like he did for a couple of months at the end of last season, and everyone will get all excited and say it's finally here. And you know that the defensive ability is going to keep him in the lineup, and the good thing so far, I guess, is that he has still stolen a couple of bases, even though he's basically done nothing else. So I guess that gives him a flaw, but he could slaughter your batting average if the cold streaks last longer than the hot streaks. And he's hitting a seventh or eighth in this lineup as well. So that does cap his upside somewhat from a accounting stats perspective as well. So, yeah, I'm not super thrilled about Buxton. I think he's an immensely talented player. But, yeah, I don't own him anywhere. And this is kind of why, because I thought this risk was still here.
Well, I think part of what is getting paralleled here is when we talked about Delino DeShields and how his draft stock absolutely soared once they found out that they were going to try him at leadoff, which, you know, was a shortened stint in and of itself because of the injury that happened to Delino DeShields shortly thereafter. But the one thing that you have is you have a guy that we believe can steal bases into the high 30s, low 40s. And we have somebody who, when he gets a hold of the ball, he can still really put a jolt into it. And so I think he's the tantalizing, low-hanging fruit amongst all of the players you can draft in fantasy baseball. Because if he does put it together, and you're the owner when he does put it together, it's not easy in this day and age to find somebody who can hit 25 home runs and potentially steal 45 bases. I think that is what makes him so tempting. I mean, he's AJ Pollock with power, and he's, by and large, he's been healthy. He just has only had month to month and a half long stretches of viability at the plate as a major league player. I know I bought in, and I sort of one other thing that happens with a player like this is an NFBC league with an overall, I kind of play as a lottery ticket. Like, I want some really high upside guys and pray that I catch them on just the right year, especially if I believe they're going to have a year where they're especially viable, where they can really carry a team for a while. And that's the trap that I fell into with Byron Buxton. I took Byron Buxton ahead of Tommy Pham, which is something I would not do right now after seeing this first month of the season. But at the same time, I was hoping to hit on all cylinders and having, you need to have a ridiculous amount of upside on your team if your hope, if you want to live the dream of perhaps winning a big overall event on, like the NFBC offers at a few different, its contests. All right, let's talk about one more player, a player that's been very polarizing within the FWFB staff. I have never been a Yasiel Puig guy. And last year he had one of the oddest seasons I can ever remember statistically, where his home run total did not seemingly jive with his runs or his RBI total last year. And he's a guy who also possesses the ability to steal a decent number of bases, not as many as Buxton perhaps, but a decent amount of bases, and also hit a goodly amount of home runs. Goodly, that's what I said. So anyway, JR, how do you feel about Yasiel Puig? And this is kind of a Dodgers report that we're doing today with these guys off to slow starts.
Yeah, I have zero stocks of Puig. I think that's because I have so many Chris Taylor or Corey Seager stocks myself, a couple Bellinger stocks here and there, but I didn't really want to get tied into Puig because, like you said, he is similar in the way to Buxton can be, where he could provide that great season if you're kind of hoping it all comes together, but he's never been one of those guys for me. I'm fine with letting him be out there and letting him, suck it up on someone's team as an outfielder two or outfielder three. But, right now he's got 9 hits and 43 at-bats, which is nothing crazy. His OBP is down at 255, which to me is very low for him. I mean, even he can put the ball in play and get his signals. He only has 3 walks on the year, too, which is kind of about average for him so far for 43 at-bats. But for Puig, I mean, he doesn't really do it for me. I mean, what could he really do? 20 homers, 20 steals, like, great. I don't know if he'll ever put that together consistently. So usually I always pass on him, but it's a regular blast season so far for Yasiel.
I think he can be a mental hurdle. He can be his own mental hurdle at times as well. And I didn't really trust that none of those issues, none of those personal issues that he's had, driving 150 miles an hour on a Florida highway, none of those personal issues as well as sort of his raging and base running issues that he's had on the field. I just thought there was enough of a cloud that I was stunned. One of the auctions I was in late, which does have an inflation problem in the auction, so the prices are higher than you'd normally expect, saw Yasiel Puig go as a $27 player. How would you feel about a $27 $27 Yasiel Puig, Darius?
Yeah, that sounds a little bit rich for my blood. I like that he's sitting third in the lineup. How long that's going to continue, you've got to imagine he moves down when Turner's back, but clearly the Dodgers are kind of committed to putting him in a good spot in the lineup right now. I do think he's been a bit unlucky. I've seen him hit a couple of balls pretty well that have ended up being outs that could easily have turned into hits, I think. So I think the overall line is a bit unfair to him, but it certainly hasn't been spectacular. And yeah, I just have always kind of wondered whether we kind of missed the peak of his physicality. I know some of the beat writers around the Dodgers have talked about how he, doesn't quite look like he's got the same step as he did when he was, the sensation of 2013-14. I think he is not aging particularly well, and he's clearly still a phenomenal athlete, but I do wonder whether he'll ever get to that kind of 20 plus steal upside that we might like to think he's got. But I think if he's going to be locked into a good spot in this lineup and Turner comes back and Bellinger starts hitting, you have to light up the context. And as much as we decry the off-field issues and the battles he's had with management and his agents and things like that, I think he does have the potential to be a very good major league hitter on his day. So I think he'll have an okay season. And probably whether, maybe you can get him for a value if an owner in your league is fed up with him, or maybe you're in a there's an owner in your league who is always the Puig fan, and you can flip him for more than you think he's worth. I think he's a pretty polarizing guy like that. So, yeah, I think he'll be okay, but maybe we'll never get that season, you know, the sort of MVP style season that I think maybe his early career is 22, 23 seasons portended at the time.
Yeah, it seems pretty dubious that we're going to get the full-blown idea of what we thought he may be early on. You know, part of what's happening here in this list is that the list is created by me, and I spent a lot of time last year just trying to mentally wrap myself around how good the Dodgers were last year. You know, I certainly never saw the Chris Taylor breakout to the extent that we saw last year. I never saw that happening. I was concerned about Puig going into the year, and although his counting numbers weren't great last year, he certainly was very good for a number eight hitter. The Bellinger breakout was a thing that, you know, I don't think anybody knew he was going to burst onto the scene exactly how he did. And in the back of my mind, I was always skeptical about exactly how good the Dodgers offense really was. By and large, last year it proved me wrong. And this year now, it's off to a slow start, and the shadow of that doubt is starting to creep back into my mind about exactly how good they are and if all these variables that we've pointed to can come together. You know, if Corey Seager can stay healthy, if the Bellinger that we saw in the playoffs that got into the huge strikeout binge that he had at just the wrong time last year, if he's going to show up for stretches on occasion. And I find extra reason to feed it again into this doubt that I have that the Dodgers are actually all that good of an offensive team. But they will get ample opportunity to prove us wrong. They've caught a break that the best pitchers for the Giants are all going down like dominoes. They've also caught a break that, you know, the pitching staff in Colorado really is not pitching all that well as of yet. They only have to deal with the red hot Arizona Diamondback pitchers, which I'm especially glad that I decided to get a piece of basically every Diamondback pitcher for early in the season. Well, the list of players that we covered today, Evan Gattis, Ryan Zimmerman, Chris Taylor, Jose Ramirez, Corey Seager, J.D. Martinez, Byron Buxton, and Yasiel Puig. Definitely one of the easier toss-ups that I've given the analysts yet this year. I want to know a couple things, guys. I want to know what you think these players all have in common, and then I want to know which player you're most worried about and which player you're least worried about. And let's start with you, JR.
Well, first, I kind of broke these down into four tiers. I don't know if you did this on purpose, but you gave us two top 25 guys in Jose Ramirez and Martinez. You then gave us two top 50 guys in Seager and Buxton. You then gave us two top 100 guys in Chris Taylor and Puig, and you finished it off with two top 150 players in Gattis and Zimmerman. Now, all these different tiers are kind of similar to that, but all of these players are off to slow starts, which is easy to say. But B, they're kind of all unproven. Some have high expectations. Some are hoping for one more great season. So they're not like guaranteed slam dunks for this upcoming fantasy baseball season. So when it comes down to the one who is the most scare for me, I guess looking at it right now might be Chris Taylor, because I have a lot of shares in him, and if he's not producing the way I needed him to produce at you know, a top 90 pick for me, I might be in a little trouble with that position.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And that is that's pretty much dead nuts what I was going for here for a theme for players. I also figured maybe the podcast could do a bit of a service in trying to get people to stay optimistic, because certainly all these players certainly have some upside as well, and we're seeing sort of the worst that they have to offer for us as of right now. Darius, who are the players that you're most and least concerned with on this list, and is that what you got for a linking force behind these guys that I picked out today?
Yeah, pretty much, and also the in addition to what JR said, the fact that they were all in the playoffs last year. admittedly, in Buxton's case, extremely briefly. The rest of these guys, I don't know if that was intentional, but I did wonder if you were trying to, they had a long season type angle and whether there was some concern over that. So that was my other connection between all of them. In terms of the guy I'm most confident about, I guess I would probably say it's Martinez from a performance standpoint. I think he's got the best bat of this lot. I do think there'll probably end up being a DL stint in there, but in terms of who I think is likely to produce the most, and I'm most confident in that production, it's him. But I would say probably Ramirez is not all that far behind, really. Honestly, you could get anything out of Buxton and out of Zimmerman. I would say those two. I think there's a huge amount of variance, and that could end up with Zimmerman being that he only ends up playing 50 games, and with Buxton he could end up hitting 210. So I think everybody knows that those are possibilities with those guys. But I also think we probably should have done a PSA at the top, as you were saying there, Chuck, that it's incredibly early, and if you're optimistic about these guys before the season, then you should probably carry on being optimistic about them for at least a little bit longer, because we haven't really seen anything out of any of them that we wouldn't have expected in the past. It's not a surprise that Buxton is striking out. It's not a surprise that Ryan Zimmerman's getting rested. So if any of this has kind of shocked you, then I guess maybe that you didn't really know as much as you thought about the players. But if you believed in those players for certain reasons, I don't think those reasons have disappeared in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the other public service announcement that that JR pointed out to multiple times during this show as well is that we don't really know what predisposition players have to playing, playing in the winter, which is basically what the entire United States has been in the winter right now. We have more snow in Wisconsin. We've had more snow since the start of this month than we had in December. So we've definitely we've seen sort of an odd twist of Mother Nature, on top of the fact that you get guys who come out to slow starts on a pretty regular basis anyway. So there's a lot to be said for being patient. I don't think any of these players should have a completely different idea of who they are yet. I did notice another player off to a very slow start. Logan Morrison has finally been drilling the ball on a regular basis. It finally paid off today. He had a walk and he had a RBI line drive single. So it's important not to get overly concerned about an early season swoon, but it's also something to keep track of in your head and think about which players you need to be the most cautious about, and the ones maybe you need to get out of your lineup for a week-long stretch, or for a scoring period stretch, depending on how you do yours, to perhaps maybe wait and see if you can get a breakout to happen before they do any further damage to your lineup. I agree explicitly with what was said by Darius and JR. I believe that I would be most concerned about Byron Buxton and Ryan Zimmerman, and close third place would be Chris Taylor, just because we've seen so little sustained excellence from Taylor and Buxton, and Ryan Zimmerman has had huge lulls in his career. Like last year, you're looking at a guy who was drafted well outside the top 300 in a lot of instances, and turned into a top 15 first baseman for stretches of the season, top 10, I believe, for a while, maybe even top 5 at the height. So you're talking about some streaky players there at the low end, and some players who have some long-term question marks because of their age. Zimmerman on the long in the tooth side, and Buxton and Taylor in so much as their major league career is still relatively young. But I wanted to touch on some of those players, and I think you have a tendency to hear a lot about players that are off to really quick starts. and potential waiver wire pickups. And in this case, maybe we're talking about some players that you can hopefully find an impatient owner who's willing to maybe give up on their upside, especially if you have a lineup that needs a jolt of really strong play. Maybe you hook into them at the right time and they help your team rebound from a slow start, as well as helping their own performance rebound as well. All right, JR, why don't you tell people your Twitter handle again and tell people what you're working on?
You can get me at Twitter at JohnRussell215. I'm actually finished packing my bags right now. I'm going to walk down to the stadium and catch the 7 o'clock game between the Phillies and the Reds. I got pretty good seats tonight. One of the friends hooked it up, so I'll be behind a catcher, be scoring the game myself. Very excited for that.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great deal of fun. That's what baseball is all about. That's what fantasy's about, giving you extra reason to enjoy a game that's easy to enjoy already.
And I'm waiting for when you get up here, Chuck. You got to come up. We're coming up and visiting soon, and we're checking out a game.
We certainly are. Unfortunately, I think I have to watch the Giants try to pretend that like they hit live. But other than that, I'm very excited about seeing the stadium and getting a drink from you while you're toiling behind the bar. That'll be fun as well. Darius, how about you, sir?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64, as you can find all my fancy writing over at Baseball Prospectus. My great fancy baseball invitational waiver wire column is continuing this week. So I took a look at some of the trends, some of the players who are still out there and kind of the differences between the leagues in who was available. So that's kind of worth checking out if you're interested in seeing how sort of 13 different leagues with the same setup can diverge from each other. And then you can also find me over at Batflips and Nerds, where we podcast about British guys trying to follow baseball, especially those of us who try and follow West Coast teams. And, well, occasionally the Giants are still playing as when I get up, as they were the other morning, which is always a bit of fun. But generally speaking, it's a bit of a tough slog. So, yeah, if you're interested in that, go check out Batflips and Nerds. We've also got a great interview with the head coach of Great Britain, Liam Carroll, on the podcast this week. So he's a really cool guy and worth listening to for his perspective on the game over here.
Well, as usual, my friends out there, thank you so much for the download and the listen. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I am working on some reactionary takes, including the fact that I think we're going to run into some tough sledding and trying to find players that we can actually use for stolen bases. That is what I'm working on right now, because, you know, Rajai Davis and some of these other players, Kevin Pillar had a 3-steal inning, I believe, already this year. And a lot of those guys are hard to find ways to get into your lineup. So even though I think stolen bases could hold relatively steady, I think they're going to be a little bit harder to actually have in your lineup. So that's the piece that I'm working on this week for the site. Thanks, everyone, for the listen. We wanted to cover some players that were off to slow starts. We did that quite well. As I always know, where the expertise of my board of analysts are going to help us long-term, and they can help you win your league long-term as well. Thanks so much for the listen. Keep supporting FWFB, and we'll keep putting out great content for you. Thanks again. This was a Friends with Fantasy Benefits quiz show podcast.